Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Tompkins, Hamler, far side. Johnson near side. Slade now to the right of McSorley. Throws in the end zone. Clock, KJ Hamler, touchdown. Penn State, 34 consecutive games with a touchdown pass for Trace McSorley. McSorley. Quarterback draw. It's going to be a draw to Sanders. Breaks a tackle with 50, 45, keeps going 40, swings to his left, 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Miles Sanders on a spectacular 48-yard run. And with Saquon Barkley in the house, he would appreciate it more than anybody.
You're exactly right, because that was a Barkley-type move.
Third down and 7, Penn State 33. Lewerke in the gun, takes it back to pass, delivers the ball, knocked away, intercepted at the 30. Taylor to the 40, 50, Garrett Taylor to the 40, tripped up at the 35-yard line. What a play by Garrett Taylor, the tip drill. John Reed got a piece of it, Jack. Takes the snap, play action fake, pressure from the outside, drills it down the middle. Freiermuth makes the catch at the 25, and Pat goes down inside the 25 and the 22 with a first down for the Nittany Lions. The big freshman tight end climbs the ladder. 21-yard attempt right in the center of the field. Kyle Vasey will snap it. Blake Gilligan will put it down. For the lead, put down. Kick by Pittiger's up. The kick by Pittiger is gone, and the Nittany Lions take the lead, 17-14 with 9:21 to go in the fourth quarter. So here we go. Trips far side. Near side, Johnson. Three-man front. Back he goes. Rolls to his right. They're going to run out of time unless he just gets rid of it. They got sets up, throws it long and deep down the field, nowhere near the end zone. It's going to be batted down by Michigan State. They're going to come in here and win it. Michigan State never took the lead until 19 seconds to go, but they win it by a score of 21-17 over the Nittany Lions.
On all three phases, we just made too many mistakes against a good football program, against a good coach who's won a lot of games. You know, the other thing is we had opportunity after opportunity to put these guys away in all three phases and didn't do that. And, there's some things, obviously, that showed up in the game that we got to eliminate, penalties, missed assignments, things like that. So, obviously not good enough, but I think the biggest thing is we had opportunities to put a team away at home, and we didn't do it.
James, talk about McSorley. He really did not be able to run the football much at all against this Michigan State defense.
Yeah, no one has. I mean, they've given up 33 yards, for the year. I think the biggest difference today is we didn't do a good enough job throwing the ball, running wrong routes. I mean, the one time Trace is going to throw the ball and pulls it back and he throws it into one of our linemen's back, it's because we run the wrong route. So there's some things that showed up here on Saturday that we haven't done all week long. So we got to make sure we're practicing with a game mentality all the time, because there's things that show up on Saturday that we are not doing Monday through Friday. So that tells me that we're not approaching it the right way, and we're getting out here and trying to become something we're not on Saturday. So we got to get that cleaned up.
And with that in mind, what does that do when you're trying to find a rhythm, and how tough was it to find a rhythm on both sides?
I think that's what eroded it. We had opportunities to make plays, we didn't, and then obviously weren't consistently running the right routes and things like that, and it gave Trace hesitation at times. So everybody's been able to throw the ball as a team. We weren't able to do it today. I think that was the biggest difference on offense. Defensively, we had opportunities to put them away and didn't. And then special teams, obviously, we got to get our field goal unit cleaned up. That continues to be an issue for us. And we worked all week long on fakes. We stopped one. We missed another one. The fake field goal was a huge play. The fake punt was a huge play for them. And we had a guy in position to make the play, and he started to run out of there before the ball snapped, and can't do that.
Yep, and that's exactly what happened. And believe me, when he tells you they worked on it all week, I can tell you right now, they worked on it all week. And then it came time, and he peeled back. He's not supposed to peel back. There's a fine line. And what hurts in the fine line in this particular game is that even when the game was over, yeah, the final score says Michigan State won. And there's no way in the planet I would tell you that Michigan State's a better team. There's no way. And, you know, and you can get into, oh, look, what a great coaching job they did. Okay, well, here's the great coaching job Michigan State did. They fumbled the ball four times in the game, recovered all four. They had a potential for a four-interception day, and because of drops, they ended up with one. Well, that's seven gigantic mistakes that Michigan State made in the game that they got away with. I mean, I think part of that is you've got to remember some of that. Penn State at the goal line, they've got a goal line stand. They get a personal foul or unsportsmanlike conduct call, and I can tell you in no uncertain terms, it absolutely, positively was the right call. There was a call on a third down play on Cam Brown that's close, but you can see in the open field there's sort of a hook, even though he's trying to get away from him. I mean, Brown's not trying to slow him down. He's just trying to get away from him, but he ends up hooking him. Okay, that's in the open field. That looks a little squirrely, so I can understand why the officials called that one. Okay. The alleged backwards pass, there'll be one other I'll talk about. Besides this, I cannot in any way, shape, or form give you a good answer that's a correct answer on that. They may have called it to the letter correctly. I'm not sure. I'm usually pretty good with the rules. I mean, I pay a lot of attention to the rules. I pay a lot of attention to especially new rules that are put in, a lot of attention. Because I want to make sure that when we're doing the broadcast, we get it right. I mean, that's everything we do is to make sure in the broadcast we get it right. And common sense tells me that, yeah, it's obvious the arm's going forward. So I have no issue with the fact that it's a pass. I have no question about that. But my arm can be going forward, you know, in terms of like the motion of it, and I throw the ball a yard back, and it turns out to be a running play. The same thing, my arm went, okay? And on this case, he threw the ball from the 27, and of course his arm got hit, and the ball went out of bounds at the 25.5. So common sense tells me that that ends up being, even though it's not his intention to do so, it ends up being a lateral to me, which means that the ball should have been at the 25.5 because the ball went back a yard and a half. Now, my understanding is Mike Pereira, who's outstanding as the rules analyst for Fox and is utilized by BTM, which is obviously 51% owned by Fox, said that they called it right in terms of an incomplete forward pass. Okay, if that's the case, that's the case. I could not give you a correct answer either way. If I were to tell you it absolutely was a lateral, I could be 100% wrong. If I were to tell you, no, they absolutely got it right, I also could be 100% wrong. I just don't know. And I think that's as fair an answer as I can give you. I don't know if they got that call right or not. They say they did. Okay, so I'll move on from that one. They say they did, so I'll move on from that. The one they got wrong, without question, and you know, the Big Ten can argue until they're blue in the face about this, was the holding call on Robert Windsor. That was absurd. That was totally absurd. I mean, Jack looked at me when they called, because remember, it's a third down play. Penn State stopped him. It's going to be fourth down. You could call defensive holding on a running play? Hey, what dream world are you living in? You never get called for defensive holding on a running play. And then we saw the replay. And the two of us looked at him like, really? You called that? That's one of those you don't call. You don't call that. You don't call that. That's the only one that was called of all, and I just went through a series of calls. Did I say they got the unsportsmanlike conduct correct? Absolutely. Did I say the hook on Cam Brown? Yeah, you know what? I can see it's in the open field. I can see why they called that. Okay? I gave you an I don't know on the potential of a lateral or not. I mean, so, right? Well, so far I backed up the officials in the personal foul, which was easy. On the hold or hook on Cam Brown, okay, and said, okay, how fair can I possibly be? So when I tell you that the call in Windsor was wrong, that should tell you that being fair about all the other calls, that one was wrong and it was pivotal. There were probably a dozen things that Michigan State needed to have go right to win that game, and they got all 12 of them. They needed to recover every one of their fumbles, all four of them. And they did. If they lose one of them, they probably lose the game. If they lose two of them, they absolutely lose the game. The three interceptions that were dropped. Any one of them ends, you know, essentially it changes the tide of the game. But there's also a key sequence in this game, too. And I go back to Ohio State last year. Remember the key sequence of the Ohio State game last year? Penn State is up 14 points. JT Barrett fumbles the ball. Sharif Miller recovers at the Ohio State 42. So here's Penn State now, where a first down, and definitely with two first downs, they're going to get a field goal out of it. So if they get a field goal, two things happen. A, by getting two first downs, you would have run the clock down to do it. And number two, you would have made it a three-score game. There's no way in the planet, in the combination of a three-score game and the clock running down some to get there, that you've run Ohio State out of time and opportunities. They can't get three possessions at that point to come back and win it. Because remember, you know, we can talk all we want about time, blah, 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 blah. You know, these are about, you know, how many possessions do you have left in a game? Okay? That's, you know, that's not talked about a lot, but that's okay. I understand that. But that's the way it is. Well, in this game, and of course, remember what happened last year, the big negative play back to the 49 or 50. Then they couldn't get out of that hole and get a first down, so they punted. Denzel Ward blocked the punt. Game turned. They won the game. To me, one of the key turning points in this particular game was the interception you heard of Garrett Taylor, where Cole Chewins reaches out and by a shoe top keeps him from scoring. Well, Penn State's got the ball first and 10 at the Michigan State 35. At this point, you can put the game away. And they didn't do it. Didn't get a first down. I thought that was a pivotal point that made me very, very uneasy about what's going on, because that was one of those opportunities to put your foot down and put it away, put the level of doubt into their head and really start you on the path to ending it. And they didn't. Now, the credit to the defense then forced a three and out after that. But offensively, you were handed by the defense a quick change opportunity, short field, and you got nothing out of it. You got nothing out of it. So there's going to be a lot of talk, obviously, about the ability to close out these games. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll take your calls at 800-795-9565. And we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Okay, let's get to the phones, because I want to make sure Larry in Montgomery gets his chance to talk about it. How you been? How you doing today?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Great to hear from you.
I have one to add to your critique of the officiating.
Mm-hmm.
On the last drive, the pass or... what's his, Armani Oruwariye,
yeah.
Dropped right in his belly and dropped it.
Yep.
I thought that should have been offensive pass interference, because that kid was wrapped all around him. I only saw it once or twice. What do you think about that?
You know what? I sort of look for that just to see, because now, because Amani's in front and he has position. I looked to see if Davis did that or not. I couldn't quite tell. So on the broadcast, I bypassed that because I didn't quite see enough from the angle they had to tell me as to whether it was or not. So on the broadcast, I bypass it because out of fairness, if I can't quite see it, I'm not really going to say it.
Yeah. Well, to me, watching the play, if the kid had his arms around him, if they weren't there, he catches that football. That's the way I looked at it.
Okay, fair enough.
And you're absolutely right about the Robert Windsor play. I've coached football for years, never seen anything like that. That was completely absurd in the game of football.
Jack Hamm and I could not believe that. And it's not as if it was a first down play. This was a pivotal play where the result of the play was going to be fourth down.
It continued to drive, and they ended up scoring, tying the ball game.
Yeah.
I don't take anything away from James and those kids. Those kids are playing their hearts out, and coaching-wise, they're doing a good job. You hear so much baloney from sports writers and so on. Even the color commentator on TV couldn't believe that call on Windsor. He says, where's the calls on the offensive linemen? They do more than that and get away with it.
Yeah. That one, like I said, that one baffled me completely. In other words, I think that one is one where I'm not sure what they saw or why they called it, because it was illogical. The other ones, okay. I think I was pretty fair going through, like, that's legit. I thought you could say that was legit. I'm not sure about the ruling, because somebody said the ball was hit. The ball was not hit on the lateral. It was the arm that was hit that caused the ball to go that way.
The arm that was hit. He still threw it, and it went backwards. Right. I don't know how they couldn't have called that a lateral.
Well,
I don't know how they couldn't have called that.
They say that they say because his arm's moving forward, it ends up being a pass, thus it's incomplete. So, I mean, Larry, I'll be honest with you. That's a rule, to be honest with you. I've never encountered that before. And so if they say that's the rule, I'm going to back away from that, because I don't want to be unfair and start talking out of turn about something maybe I don't know about.
Yeah, okay. Well, I just wanted to point out that.
No, it's a good game.
Or your Warrior pass. I thought that should have been offensive pass interference.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had the ball, and it dropped away.
And while I admire the attempt, you can just call him Amani from now on. We'll know it.
Okay.
This will make it easier for you, Larry. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks for taking the call.
I admire the attempt, though. That was good.
Yeah.
All right. Coming up, we'll talk with Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Great to have you with us today on the show. Don't forget, tonight we'll have Monday Night Football, the Niners and the Pack from Lambeau this evening here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. Back with the second half hour of the show in a moment, and more of your calls on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, the Iowa game will be a 3:30 kickoff at a 2 o'clock airtime for your planning purposes.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And great to have you with us on the show today. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's has served this valley for decades. Customer comes first. Simple as that. It's that simple philosophy that means so much. We've heard Adam Purdy talk about, hey, I got a call on a weekend. They wanted to make sure they were okay and they were covered. They were. But the fact is, he said, look, I'm available. Talk to me. You have questions. We're here to help. We're going to make sure that you have peace of mind. That's what you need in your insurance agent. And also one that's going to find you the best price. I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Okay. Coach Susan joins us on the phone. Joe, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
It's good to be back, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. Good. Okay. You face all sorts of tests during the course of a year. What kind of test did Monmouth give you on Saturday?
You know, we knew that they were going to come in with an explosive offense, quarterback, running back, and one of the better receivers I think we'll see all year. And our defense really answered the call in terms of confusing them, both from a protection standpoint, a coverage standpoint, and really kept them at bay. You know, I was talking to Sean earlier. We played very good football for about 52 minutes, and momentum went back and forth in this game, as it normally does when it's a punch-counter-punch game. And we wound up with 8 minutes left in the game, up 3, 19-16. And we threw an interception on a 3rd and 4 at the 47, I think it was. And even if that were incomplete and we punted them in, it changes the complexion of the game in terms of what we've been able to do against them defensively. And it just gave them the incentive, and they scored a couple quickly. We just couldn't come back and match them score for score. Resiliency of the young men on our team, that shows. Obviously, you want to do what it takes to win, but we're back in the league, and I think that the things we've learned in the out-of-conference teams that we've played, obviously, we're young, but that doesn't really count, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
young lasts for a couple games, maybe, and we'll get some guys back this week too, which is good. We'll get Chance Riley back. We'll get John Fox back. I think that'll help us defensively. And I think Marquise Carter is a couple of weeks away, so it'll help our running game. But Jared Cooper really played well once again, and some of the seams he hits are impressive in terms of when he comes out and he gets out in the open. You wonder how he gets out. I'm glad he gets out.
Yeah, no, exactly. A year ago, Logan Bitticofer was your offensive scout team player of the year. He gets into the breach in this one. How did he handle the pace and the speed of the game?
You know, there are some things that I think he got better with. Obviously, managing our protection schemes, he did a very good job with. I thought our offensive line played probably their best game all year, and that's a good sign because we've got some younger guys there. There were some things that Logan should have taken better care of in the run-pass option game, but sometimes it's a hard thing, you know, when you're reading a defensive end and also getting a feel for how they're covering behind it. So do you throw it? Do you keep it, or do you hand it off? And it winds up being triple option football. And I think the best thing there is getting experience doing it. And there'll be a lot of carryover from a defensive standpoint with what Monmouth did compared to with what Lafayette will do this week. And I think it'll help him as he continues to mature. But we got to make some plays too. Our outside guys, we dropped 3 balls, and one of them could have been a 60-yarder that when you get an opportunity like that, they don't come around too often. You better cash it in, or it becomes a foul ball to straightaway center.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about Cooper as a running back. He was also very effective as a receiver. What kind of route runner has he been, and how effective is he when you get him in space?
He has the ability to make people miss. We have yet to really use him in, you know, defined routes. Most of what we have him do are either flat routes, wheel routes, or in the screen game. It'll be interesting to see once we do evolve to where we can put him out in space. And great hands, adjusts to the ball well. One of the things that he's really gotten better with, Steve, is his ability to protect. And he's mastered the art of taking people off their feet, cutting them. And that's where center of gravity helps you. And I was always center of gravity challenged because I'm 6'5".
That makes two of us.
He might be a little vertically challenged, but it really pays off because he's taking some of the best players on the field and putting them on the ground. And what that does is it really impacts how they rush the passer, knowing that they got cut the last time. And his maturity level for a first-year player is outstanding. And when he came back from scoring the 74-yard touchdown on the screen, normally he'd come over, shake my hand, and thank me. I beat him to the punch. I thanked him on that one.
Okay, you're done with the non-conference part of this. So now you're back into the Patriot for four straight. In the end, what did the non-conference do that can benefit you getting back into the Patriot? Because when you stepped out to play non-conference, you did not exactly face the Little Sisters of the Poor.
I think it's consistent with any sport, Steve. In order to improve, play up. And, you know, I played a lot of tennis for a long time, and I was always looking for somebody better than me to play. And that, you know, obviously as a football coach with, you know, how you feel about your team, and you shouldn't say that, but some of the teams that we played are in terms of more mature, more 50-year guys, they're better enough. And I think that the things we've done and the way our kids have played give me confidence that we have an opportunity to win one at a time, though. But we have an opportunity to win the rest of the games we'll play. And I told them this after the Colgate game, that you never know what's going to happen in the league. You know, Colgate's actually doing really well, but who knows?
Right.
The wrong guy gets hurt. They make a mistake here, and it's hard to run the rack in the league. And you look at the past league champions, that's how it's been. But we'll take care of the things we've got to take care of. The good thing about this week is it bleeds into a bye week, so that some of the other guys that are still working against some injuries will come along. And as long as we can stay healthy through the weekend, I think we'll get stronger as the year goes on. That's how you should be. The out-of-conference schedule was a challenge. It'll always be a challenge. And, you know, the thing that I've told our administrators, we're willing to play anybody as long as it's realistic. And it helps us get better, and it helps us recruit the type of people that understand the challenges we're willing to take on as a program as it relates to the people we play out-of-conference.
Which then brings up a word that you brought up during the course of that answer, and that was the word confidence. You can play an easy non-conference schedule, and you may end up with a false sense of confidence as to how good you really are, but also can work the other way. You know, you have to fight your guts out, and you don't quite get the results you want. How do you feel about where your team's confidence line is right now? Because that's always a fine line for any team.
It is, and I think a lot of it relates to the leaders that we have, the Joe Lauros, the Alex Peachin, the Brian Marines. And it also relates to the vigor of youth, the Grayson Cherubinos, the Jared Coopers, Brandon Sanders, Brandon Benson came back, and Garrett Vanatale. These guys, they just keep going, and it's refreshing. And I've told them this, and I'll I don't know if I said it on the air before, but them on our practice fields make practice the best time of our day as coaches. Right. And when you get up, when I do, usually by the end of the day and you're on your fifth coffee, but what it gives you goosebumps to go on the practice field. And you know, that's the best time of my day. And that'll be consistent until they drag me away from this profession. But it's all related to the guys we coach. And we have the right guys in our program. We're recruiting the right guys in our program. And obviously, college football requires that you win. And we're going to work our tails off to win the rest of these. And you know, the good thing is that, and I want the seniors to go out the right way, but we have a foundation of youth in this program. As long as we can keep them healthy, the future's now, but it's bright.
No question. And sometimes in adversity, with some of the injuries you've encountered, it does open the door of opportunity for somebody else to prove something to you. Has that allowed your trust level in some of those younger players to grow because they've started to earn your trust?
It has. And, you know, just for example, a young man like Dominic Lyles, who's a receiver out of DeMatha in D.C., he made the play on the 74-yard screen. It's a crack screen, and he came in and just leveled the linebacker. The linebacker did not know he was coming. And the excitement we saw in that guy's eyes after he hit the linebacker, it just, those are the things that are rewarding when you're doing something. You didn't have the ball. You're doing something that you contributed, and you did the job the best you could. And we finally blocked people on a screen, from the offensive line to the tight end to the receivers. And that's what creates the 74-yard touchdown. And you know, a 74-yard drive isn't the easiest drive to make when you're doing it in 15 plays. It's nice to do it in one play because somewhere along the way in 15 plays you're going to face a third down that might not be the easiest thing to attain. So when you have home run hitters and you can hit home runs, it really makes things different. And you know, obviously we've got to continue to work to score more. And you know, whether the score is 3-2 or 45-44, we just want to score one more than they do.
Two more questions, then I'll let you go. One deals with Lafayette. The Sean O'Malley, Nick Pearson combination. How tough a combination is that?
No, it's been interesting to watch Sean O'Malley evolve from the guy he was last year as a freshman to the guy he is now. And I think that he's playing with a lot of confidence, Ian Pierce. And John Garrett does an outstanding job of matchups, and that's his history in the NFL. NFL is obviously about formations, about plays, but it's also about matchups, where you put a guy in a formation to try and facilitate his athletic ability as it compares to guys he's going against. And the thing that we will work to do, though, is disrupt both from a protection standpoint and a coverage standpoint. He's still a sophomore, and you know, obviously he's had games behind his belt, but you know, the learning curve in college football, other than if you're Grant Brenneman from Colgate, the learning curve continues. And you know, especially with what they're asking O'Malley to do, they're asking him to be a pocket style quarterback, different than what Brenneman is. Brenneman's, you know, another running back, another probably catches the ball well. I don't know if he's caught any this year, but we're going after O'Malley. And I know John Garrett will have this team ready for us. He's a longtime friend, and we'll create an enemy for both of us for 60 minutes, and then we'll be friends again.
And finally, I have to ask you about R.J. Nitti. He signed to play in the Alliance of American Football at quarterback.
Really?
He's one of those guys that signed in, so he's going to get another opportunity in the spring to show what he can do. How important is at least something like that for Bucknell football, but more importantly for him to get that extra shot.
You know, the thing that I see with him is a young man that worked his tail off to be the best he can be, and I didn't know that. That's exciting. I'm going to reach out to him and congratulate him. There comes a point in your life where football's over, and you got to understand that. With me, it came after I lost about 30 pounds, and the Eagles wanted me to be a free agent, and I went from 295 to about 260, and I said, nah, I think I'm going to just keep this coming off. Yeah. But I knew that in his mind, RJ was not ready to hang it up, and I'm happy for him. And you know, I hope that this league becomes a league that becomes a minor league for the NFL. And you know, obviously, college football is that, but it gives the guys an opportunity to play. You know, somewhere along the way, you got to give it up, but if it's in you, it's hard to give up. And you know, some of us wind up giving it up, but it's always a part of us, so we coach or we broadcast.
That's right. It's exactly right. It's amazing to still be involved in the game. It really is. Coach, thanks so much. Good luck. It's noon this week at Christie. Look forward to it very much. Good luck.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sean. You guys have a great day.
You too, Coach. Got it.
Take care.
Right.
Bye.
We'll take a break. Doug from Wellsboro, when we come back, News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Just going to get right to Doug as quickly as we can, because I apologize, Doug, for the limited time. How are you?
Hey, good. Congrats on the new grandchild.
Oh, thanks, Doug. That means a lot. Thank you very much.
Hey, a couple quick things. Why in the world didn't they double-team Felton Davis on that last play? He was the one that beat him last year. I know they can't get a pass rush with the front four they have now, but if any guys they would double-team, why didn't they double-team him?
Yeah, in other words, rotate a safety over. Good question. And I think they were trying to cover the center of the field, and I think they felt Amani could handle him one-on-one. And obviously he threw the back shoulder. But he underthrew the back shoulder, which was really odd about that. And Amani had him well covered on the one. He had the potential interception. There was the other one Amani deflected that Davis caught. So he had, for the most part, good coverage on him, really, until that last play. Davis did. There was a busted coverage on the other touchdown. Okay, but I think they felt that he could handle him one-on-one.
Can anybody else kick besides Penninger? He kicks a straight ball, but he has no idea where it's going. When the pressure's on, he's missing.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because he's been the best guy, because normally he's the guy that gets the ball up in the air quickly over the line. I think in watching the kickers in practice, Doug, I think he's the best option. But I know every single week it's not automatically handed to him. He's had to win it every week.
Well, I trust what you say. If you say he's the best option, then that's it. I give him credit. He kicks a straight ball, but who knows where the thing's going.
Yeah, you know what? And I kind of felt in the last one he was trying to aim it. Did you get that same feeling? I kind of felt on that one he was trying to, like, aim it. And it's like, don't just aim. Just go through and kick it. Be relaxed.
If he misses one early on, he kind of tries to guide the thing. He won't just strike the ball. That, he kind of guides it.
That, in fact, what you just said is actually a better way of saying it. That's how I should have said it, guiding the ball. You're right.
Hey, one last quick thing. This is minor that happened right before the end of the first half. There's about 15 seconds left. I think they were in punt safe. Why did they even put Tompkins back to try and catch that ball? He's pretty shaky to begin with. He would have fumbled that ball. They could have jumped on and kicked a field goal. It made no coaching sense whatsoever. Put him back. Why not let the ball drop?
You know what? Because I think they always feel that they can take one back. I think that's, I mean, even in that situation, I think there's always something in it where they think they can take it back. And so putting him back there is actually trying to make an aggressive play and burn them for attempting to get it down there.
Okay.
I think that would be the answer that James would give you.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your time today, Steve.
Hey, thanks so much, Doug. Appreciate it.
Bye.
All right. Let's see. We will come back second hour of the show, which will include Ben Jones, Matt Leon, also your calls. We'll take more of your calls. And we'll come back with more brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.